On BYUSN, with the expected change at quarterback, one projection as BYU's win total dropped by a whole game. But are the Cougars a top five team with a new starting quarterback? With the Big 12 getting rid of the conference preseason poll, should college football do away with the preseason AP poll and maybe even more into the season?
BYU Athletic Director Brian Santiago details how BYU has grown since joining the Big 12. And why more prominent athletes are now choosing to come to Provo. And we'll preview Yegor Demin's NBA Summer League debut with Eric Slater of the Locked On Nets podcast. What would a good first game look like today?
Welcome to BYU Sports Nation, presented by the BYU Store, official outfitter of BYU fans everywhere. It is Thursday, July 10th. Great to have you with us. I'm Jerem Jordan. He is T.C. Williams High School run game coordinator, Jason Shepard.
T.C. Williams High School.
Yeah.
What's the reference?
Remember the Titans?
Yes. I've seen Remember the Titans once.
That's it?
Look, I understand.
Can you work at BYU with only one of those on your ledger?
Consider it twice because it's the movie night at Lavelle Edwards Stadium coming up tomorrow night.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Remember the Titans.
I do remember the
stadium.
Titans,
Let's
the
go.
Movie. I did not remember the high school.
You remembered the mascot, essentially.
I remembered Denzel.
Nice.
That's what I remembered.
The run game coordinator thing is they ran a reverse.
Yeah.
On the last play.
Yeah. I just didn't remember the name of the high school.
There was some weird blocking, like Hollywood blocking going on. Let's hope BYU doesn't block like that this fall. Flipping dudes over. I think that's...
That would be awesome. Perfectly
acceptable. I could see Andrew Gentry pulling to the left side and just pancaking fools. Legs in the air. That'd be awesome. And tomorrow is a nice round number of days to Portland State. And we are one day closer to that. Hit it.
Countdown to the Viking.
51 days. Hey, we can smell it now. I mean, we're practicing in three-ish weeks.
Can you smell what the Rock?
The Rock, ROC?
The ROC
is cooking. I like where,
see?
Where
see?
Your head is.
It works.
Even though that head is only seen, Remember the Titans one time. All rise and shout. It's time for What's Trending.
I think BYU again is in store for another good season. I really do.
They're just tough. I mean, we got the guys that we need to do their thing and not have to worry about teams, to show people, you know, we're the real deal. You know, they don't know, but they're about to find out, you know.
That's the hope. What's Trending is presented by Tim Daly Ford, part of Tim Daly Auto Group, serving Utah since 1968. This is a place of eternal truth. And those are Todd here and Liv. So let's play a little BYU Sports version of True or False. We got several topics to cover the gamut of what's going down. BYU's win total projection for 2025 fell from 7.5 to 6.5, according to Circa, after the report that Jake Retzlaff intends to transfer. That gives BYU the eighth highest projected win total in the Big 12. True or false, BYU is not a top five team in the Big 12 without Jake Retzlaff at quarterback?
I am going to say false. I still believe BYU can finish as one of the top five teams in this conference. I'm not surprised that the win total dropped by a game. That's what we all kind of assumed. That's fair.
Yeah.
Where I have the issue is that it started at 7.5 in terms of the wins.
You wanted it what, 8.5?
8.5, or quite frankly, 8.5 or 9.5 is...
9.5 would have been real high.
Agreed,
yeah.
But that's where I have the issue. I don't have the issue with it dropping a game. But look, and it sounds like that I'm saying that the quarterback doesn't matter, that you're minimizing what Jake did or what the quarterback position is. Of course not. That's not what we're doing. But I still believe that this team is good enough to finish as a top five team in the Big 12, even with, right, at least as of today, the uncertainty on who will be the starting quarterback. So right now I'm going to say false.
Why is that? Why do you feel that way?
Well, because I feel like I keep harping on this because I believe in this team. I believe in the offense. I believe in the scheme. And I think it goes back to what we heard the other day. Maybe it was yesterday. This kind of the days seem to all run together in terms of all the interviews and the quotes that keep coming out.
Yep.
But yes, there will be a quarterback taking snaps, we believe, that has not taken snaps as a BYU guy.
Well, that's a guarantee.
But the scheme is the same. The coaches are the same. While some of the players and weapons around have changed a little bit,
not too much.
Your go-to guys, Chase Roberts, LJ Martin, JoJo, Parker Kingston, those guys are still there. Your tight ends, which we all expect to have a much bigger role.
Tight end? What?
So
BYU's going to use the tight end, we anticipate.
I understand, and there will be a couple of other topics that we'll get to in a few minutes where it's clear BYU is being dinged quite heavily because of the uncertainty at quarterback, and we'll get into that.
Yeah. And it was a senior-to-be. That's
yes,
a big deal. Right?
Yes. Yeah. But I just believe that this team is still good enough to achieve the goals that it had set for itself prior to everything that's taken place.
And that's called football playoff, frankly, and the Big 12 title game. More on who, On3 did a poll, and they have some interesting info. We'll give that in a second. To me, it's TBD. It's based on QB play. I need to see how that quarterback performs. Because if the defense is amazing, the special teams is amazing, and the quarterback is just meh, the run game's going to have to be incredible. Like, there are elements to this that really matter of who's slinging it, who's running. Is it McKay Hillstead? Is it Tracy Borgay? Is it Bear Bachmeyer? We will see. What we believe is what you outlined. I'll continue to make that point. We believe the defense could be the top defense in the league or close to it again. Improved defensive tackle play, two NFL linebackers, loaded secondary that's deep. Special teams, Will Farron, Parker Kingston are back. Keelan Marion averaged about 18 yards per return minus the two TD returns. Those two TDs were awesome. When he wasn't returning them for a touchdown, they weren't that far, let's be honest. Offensively, Cougars expect a good offensive line. You have two new tackles with Isaiah Jada, Andrew Gentry, and then Lapuaho Mitchell, Maxini Leusa on the interior, four dudes for three spots. Those guys have experience. LJ Martin, Sione Moa, Pokai Haunga, apparently Hinkley Ropati is going to be back too, which is interesting. That's a loaded room. I really like that too. Tight ends, they like Carson Ryan from Utah. We haven't seen the tight end used a ton since, frankly, 2020 with Isaac Rex. Biggest TBDs, QB, man. And that's probably the difference between 8-ish wins and 10 or 11 wins. Is BYU top five with a new QB? They'd have to go 6-3 in league, probably. The schedule is always tough in this league. We'll see who's not as good as we thought. We'll see who's better than
because
we thought.
Because there are always teams that you thought
absolutely
were going to be great. Look,
last year
clearly,
we thought ASU was going to stink.
Yes.
BYU was coming off 5-7. BYU was one of those teams.
It never truly plays out like everybody thinks. There will always be surprises. There will always be disappointments.
Yes. So I cannot declare today true or false in this. I have to see that quarterback.
I would like you to declare today.
I won't say it. I'll declare it, Michael. Scott.
Yeah, I mean, it's until the quarterback is named, there's going to be a
it's not named enough for me. I have to see him play.
No, but at least
like
once you know
games,
who
dude.
It's going to be, you can then okay, we'll probably see to what you were talking about. If it's McKay Hillstead, okay, we'll probably see more of the run game out of the quarterback.
Yes.
That we will have that element.
I need to see them execute on 3rd and 6, down 6 with 4 minutes to go at their own 28. Like, I just need all the situations. It's all new. It's P4. If it's Bear Bachmeyer and he wins the job, it's college football.
Right.
I mean, none of these guys took a snap last year in college, let alone at BYU. So it is totally new. We have confidence in this group, but certainly that quarterback, let's be honest. When you see Jake Retzlaff and you see like 58% completion percentage and 12 picks, you think, well, those weren't monster numbers, but he had a few clutch moments where that guy had to make those plays.
Yeah.
Who is that guy and will he make those plays? I'm going to enjoy the process of watching that play out.
And specifically with this year's non-conference schedule, specifically the first two of the first three, I think it is one that will help out this situation at quarterback because you've got Portland State, you've got Stanford both at home where you should be 2-0 regardless of who the quarterback is after those two games.
You better be 3-0. If you're losing at ECU, you can't be like, we're going gangbusters on the Big 12.
Right.
Yeah, you got to be 3-0 going into Colorado. And frankly, you should win that game too, be 4-0.
Okay. All right. Big 12 Commissioner Brett Yormark said this week at Media Days that the Big 12 got rid of the preseason poll because it hurt teams like Arizona State last year
and BYU
and adds no value to the conference. That's why they nixed it.
Adds value to our daily show.
That is where we miss it. Spencer then spoke with ESPN's Matt Berry at Media Days about his thoughts on getting rid of the preseason poll, and he added this about the preseason AP poll.
It's my biggest pet peeve in college football. Of all the things I love about the sport, preseason polls, rankings, they're garbage. They mean nothing. There are teams that are ranked in the top 10 that won't sniff the top 40 at the end of the season. But they get the benefit of the doubt of being the top 10 team. Here's the other thing about them. If you find a team that comes up the rankings in the season, like, oh, they got a top five win early in the season. Well, yeah, well, where's that top five team now that was preseason ranked top five? They're 35th.
All right, true or false, college football should get rid of the preseason AP poll.
True. I actually want it away until after week six, Sunday, October 5th.
Oh, you give want me your cake and eat
give
it too.
Me, all of it. If it's my birthday, absolutely. Sunday, October 5th is when I want the first poll. Because
it's very specific.
Yes, because it's after week six. Let's see half the season, and then we can really assess what the teams are. It's so true. I'm not big on the when it happened thing. I'm big on the, well, what were they at the end of the year? And so I would like it to go away because it did hurt BYU last year. If you just blind resumed BYU, they should have probably been in the mix for the college football playoff more than they were, and that was really frustrating. It really was.
Okay, but don't you and I agree with you.
I like the marketing angle of all of it,
yes.
Blah, blah, blah. But is it helpful to have the AP poll in the preseason? Is it helpful to even have it in the first month?
I'm going to agree with you.
I don't think it is.
It's true. I agree. You should probably get rid of the preseason AP poll altogether. I don't care. I mean, if you bring it back month in, 2 months, whatever. At the end of the day, I'll say true to get rid of it. But for the example that you used in terms of it hurting BYU, there will be years where it could help. So it is a double-edged sword. But getting rid of it...
It hasn't very often enough for me to want.
Correct. Yeah. But I'm perfectly fine. If you take out the equation where we get to talk about it and it's a talking point for a while, whether it's good or bad.
I think we got enough.
Then in terms of what it's for and how it actually could hurt you, because I think it can hurt you more than it can help you.
Yes.
For that reason alone, I say I'm perfectly fine to get rid of it. And again, it feels like there's momentum that way to eventually get rid of some of these things that have always been a part.
Hopefully.
College football.
I mean, it's only one
power
league
right.
So far. I wouldn't call that momentum per se. I would call that just one act.
No, but the fact that we're even having these conversations, I mean, it's becoming more and more. People are more vocal about it.
One league is. If the Big Ten or SEC don't do one, now we're talking. Now there's actual sway there, in my opinion. Okay, our question today is this. Should college football get rid of the preseason AP poll? Why or why not? At D Hodges 89 on X. 100%. There should be no polls for at least a few weeks each year. Too many people are biased by where a team starts the year. It really does affect you on Selection Sunday. Still, in basketball, it's nice. We don't really care about the polls. We care about net. We care about bracketology. In football, the polls are everything. And we look at the AP poll, and we put it in the blender, and we talk about it all the time. Then the college football playoff poll comes out, and we just forget about the AP
right.
poll. It's a weird deal. What if we just didn't care anymore about that? This is the age of a ton of information. This is not 1984 where we're waiting for the newspaper to come out to know what happened on the East Coast, maybe. Or the nightly news, like 10 o'clock news has a different place than it did then. Information travels in a different way. We don't need to have falsities of information relative to sports teams. We can just watch them play and then see where they end up. So at Ty Scott Jensen on X. No, I like it. Why not? Teams and players just can't let it get to their head. Well, you don't like it if it doesn't get you into the playoff because you weren't ranked as high. And in 1984, BYU was unranked to start. They go and win the ship. That's because a lot of teams lost. There were no undefeateds. BYU kind of got lucky that there were no undefeateds. But if it was modern, it was poll-based and everything, well, I don't know, based on they weren't ranked at the beginning. Who cares? Like, what do you actually do on the field? That's what should matter. And if you're going to say the 5+11, earn it on the field, this messaging is in line with the actions that the Big 12 is taking. We're not going to do a preseason poll because we want to get two teams in. That's the goal of the league.
All right. At Big 12 Media Days yesterday, former Cougar linebacker Kyle Whittingham,
nice.
Utah head coach, said that the BYU-Utah game could and should be instrumental in who ends up winning the Big 12. Mm. So true or false, the winner of the BYU-Utah game will play in the Big 12 championship game?
I want it to be true relative to BYU and not a big fan of the other team on the other side there. That's the most respect, by the way, Kyle's given BYU in a long time. to allude that potentially BYU would be in the mix there. Utah feels like they were close. They were 1-5 in one-score games last year, and they had an abysmal offense. They bring in Devin Dampier from New Mexico. Jason Beck was that OC. They have a great offensive line. Spencer Fano is one of the best right tackles in college football. BYU was a few plays away. I can see the argument. But I don't know.
Yeah.
There's 16 teams in the league.
That's why I'll say false, because there's absolutely no way of knowing. First, this conference, there's so much parity in this conference. For us to day one or on July 10th, to say that team for sure is going to be in the Big 12, there's not a chance in the world, so I will say false for that reason.
Yeah. Okay, sticking with the Big 12 title game. On Three's Brett McMurphy, that's a new gig for him, conducted a poll of Big 12 coaches, Big 12 media days, about which two teams they believe will play in the title game, and the two with the most votes were Kansas State and Iowa State. True or false, Kansas State and Iowa State will play in the Big 12 championship game. Of note, BYU was not mentioned as either of the two teams by anyone polled.
Did not receive a vote. I will say false.
I like that we left a certain team off the graphic. Who got one vote?
Look, one, you got to have more than one to make the graphic, right?
Yeah,
right?
One is
I'll say false for the same reasons for the argument I just made for the BYU-Utah game. There's no way of knowing. Now, out of these two, I think there's one, in my opinion, I think has a better shot than the other. That would be Kansas State.
Okay.
I love Avery Johnson, and I know last year didn't go the way that K-State fans wanted or K-State themselves wanted.
It went great in Provo for BYU.
It did go great in Provo, but I love Chris Klieman as a head coach. I love what he does. He will get this going again. Yep. So between the two, I like K-State, but I will say false with those two if we're having to pick today.
Yeah, I'll say false, too, just because someone's going to show up that you don't expect. Mm-hmm. And last year, Iowa State finally got to double-digit wins for the first time ever.
Right.
They had never done it. Now they're expected to do it with Rocco Beck, that great defense. K-State, to me, Avery Johnson's the best dual threat in the league. Devin Dampier, hopefully, Utah fans think he's the guy. Texas Tech loaded up in the portal with Cody Campbell's money. Baylor ended the season on a six-game win streak in the regular season. That offense was amazing. Josh Hoover threw for 4,000 yards. There's so much parity in this league. Like, can BYU sort of do what they did last year and have a quarterback who manages the game, is clutch at times, great defense, special teams, good run game, and challenge and be in the mix for this? Because I think this team is anxious. They've talked a lot about the Big 12 title game, a lot about proving themselves right, not proving others wrong, but they would prove others wrong in this poll as well.
That
whatever motivation you need.
I alluded to this at the beginning of this segment. This, to me, is a perfect example of where BYU has gotten significantly dinged because of the quarterback.
Because Retzlaff out.
So here's my question to you.
If Retzlaff is in it.
That's where I was going with this.
Sorry, go ahead.
If Jake Retzlaff was going to be the quarterback this year.
Yes.
How many of these teams do you believe BYU would be in front of right now?
Because I believe BYU would be fifth.
Okay, I think they're ahead of Utah. They're ahead of Baylor. I don't understand the TCU thing right now. I'm not saying that they can't be.
They're an outlier.
But I'm surprised that they got three first place votes.
I'm actually higher on Baylor than the coaches.
So I would put BYU ahead of Utah, Baylor, TCU, and then
Texas Tech added so much in the portal.
Yes, they spent so much money.
If they gel, they could absolutely be one of the best teams.
They could also do what happened to BYU, and BYU corrected themselves, where they got so much out of the transfer portal. And continuity,
yes.
It took them a long, long time, and they never quite found the continuity that they needed.
Yes, but BYU is absolutely a quarterback away from being an obvious pick here. One of the three or four.
Yeah.
They really are. Okay, NCAA tournament expansion expected to have a decision within the next 24 hours. True or false? The NCAA tournament should expand past 68.
False.
Who wants this?
Capital
besides
F.
Besides the money grabbers.
Well, that's what that's all these decisions boil down to.
NCAA,
is
like, who wants this?
It's more revenue. That's all this is.
Yeah.
Look, I think it was Stuart Mandel yesterday put out a poll about, do you want the NCAA tournament to expand? Yes or no? And the results were 93% no. And he's like, in today's society, if you get 93% of society to agree on something, that's a pretty strong argument.
Very strong argument.
No, I don't. I didn't even like the adding of the first of four. The first four, the play-ins. I didn't even like any of that.
I don't know what the point of that is.
We're just devaluing the specialty of getting there. It's like what we've done with the bowl system.
Yeah. And
everybody gets in, so there's nothing special about it.
No one has made their playoffs shorter. The NBA has added play-in games.
Right.
They have added wildcard teams to NFL and MLB. It's all for money. It's all for TV and revenue and whatnot. BYU's not in a hopefully they get in situation as long as one Kevin Young is the head coach here. And so we don't care about this as much as we would. I think a couple years ago, we would have been like, this is great.
Yes.
But now we're in a different atmosphere with BYU basketball, so we don't want it.
All right, tune in tomorrow for a Best of Big 12 Football Media Days special featuring interviews with guests like Kalani Sitake, Big 12 Commissioner Brett Yormark, and ESPN's Matt Berry. That's tomorrow, noon Eastern, on BYU TV and BYU Radio.
After the break, new athletic director Brian Santiago goes one-on-one with Spencer on the growth of BYU in the Big 12 and why more prominent athletes are choosing Brigham Young. This is BYU Sports Nation.
This portion of BYU Sports Nation is presented by the Tim Daly Auto Group, serving Utah since 1968.
Got a brotherhood that's going to rally around you. You got a Cougar Nation that's going to rally around you. We get to be in this game of college sports with some of the best coaches and student athletes in the game.
We get to cover it here on BYU Sports Nation, which is a ton of fun. Jeremy Jordan alongside Jason Shepard. Welcome back to your day-to-day Cougar Sports play-by-play here on BYU Sports Nation. Well, Athletic Director Brian Santiago made his Big 12 Football Media Days debut this week. He stopped by to chat with our own Spencer Linton about this season in the Big 12 and why the Cougars are killing it in recruiting.
Brian, you've been very vocal, especially on our show, about the momentum and the energy within BYU athletics right now. And certainly football plays a huge role in that. So to be here and experience Football Media Day, what has your juices flowing today when it comes to the excitement about BYU football?
Spencer, it's always exciting when you start talking about football because it just means fall is close. The season's on the horizon, and we have great momentum. I talk about it often, and it starts and stops with Kalani Sitake. He's one of the most respected men in the room. I just left a room with Kenny Dillingham from Arizona State, Scott Frost from UCF. You had these great coaches in the room. The respect in the room for Kalani Sitake, when you get to walk the path with a coach like that, that's what gets me super excited. And then, like, I look at these five players that we brought down here and was with them last night, and I'm thinking, you know what, if we're going to battle in this world of college sports, I want to go to battle with those guys. And that's what gets my juices flowing is I just think that we have great leadership.
Well, let's call a timeout just for a second on football, because I want to bring up something Brett Yormark talked about when he referenced BYU's multiple cross-country national championships and then Megan Hunter as the winner of the Bob Bowlesby Award. What did it mean to you as the athletic director to hear those names and those teams mentioned by the commissioner of the conference at Football Media Days?
Yeah. It's exciting and it's humbling, right? And for me, the thought that we get to be in this game of college sports with some of the best coaches and student athletes in the game, and to have Megan Hunter called out, it's one of the great stories to me in the history of college sports. For her to come forth triumphant like she has, to win at the level she's winning, is both miraculous and inspiring. And then she's coached by one of the great coaches in all of the sport, Diljit Taylor, who's an unbelievable leader of women and empowering women right now across the world. You have Ed Eystone winning national championships. They showed highlights of both of them lifting the trophy. I think that there's great respect in the Big 12, but I think that's a tribute to all of our coaches, all of those that have been involved in preparing us to enter the Big 12. We always felt like when we came into the Big 12, we would be prepared to compete at the highest level right off the bat. And that's a tribute to our coaches and student athletes over time that prepared us so well to make this move. And now to feel like we're nationally relevant, to feel like we are chasing greatness together is super inspiring. And to be able to do it the BYU way and not shy away from exactly who we are and what we represent, that was also in the messaging from Kalani and others about who we are, right? It's on the forefront of everybody's minds. And I love that we have coaches and others that are going to stand up with confidence and talk about the greatness of BYU for precisely who we are and who we represent.
Well, the theme that you have presented here is great respect for all of these coaches and certainly for Kalani. So going back to Coach Satake, what do you feel like is creating a scenario where players are just naturally gravitating toward him more and to BYU and are willing to embrace the honor code and what BYU athletics is all about? What's happening there with Coach Satake and the culture?
Yeah, I think that over time he's built a culture of greatness on the football field, but people are starting to understand who he is as a human being and they want to be a part of it. His leadership is off the charts. It's next level. And to hear our student athletes talk about him, I slipped into some interviews and heard our 5 student athletes talking about why they choose BYU and why recruits are choosing BYU. Spencer, we're seeing a remarkable movement right now in nationally recognized recruits choosing BYU precisely for what BYU is and what we represent. Like there's a clear reason why they're choosing BYU. We feel like it's a competitive advantage. The honor code, the representation of everything that's good in life, I think that's precisely why these student athletes are choosing BYU, our current student athletes, but you can feel it. It's a culture that's been built and where they really feel like they can prepare for and get ready for the NFL, chase their dreams on the football field, but also prepare for life and go make a difference and go change the world. Like it doesn't get any better. And it gets me super excited. You know, we've got, like you start talking about recently, there was a big announcement, Ryder Lyons going on TV telling the world that he's choosing BYU. AJ DeBanza choosing BYU. Kihei Akina, one of the great golfers in the world, says, I want to be at BYU. Jane Hendergren, who's breaking all sorts of records, saying, I want to be at BYU. I think that there's a clarity of why they're choosing BYU, and I think it's because they understand exactly what BYU is, what it represents to the world, and all the goodness and the sponsoring institution. It's really exciting. That's what gets me super excited is we can go and chase greatness, but do it in a way that's going to bring positive light to not only the athletic department and the university, but the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints. When you put all that together, like, let's go. Amazing things happening.
I know that this is a loaded question, but with the evolving culture of college sports, rev share in place, NIL shifting, obviously BYU has great support from those groups and the boosters and the alumni base. How do you sustain it, not just for a year or 2 years, but for the foreseeable future and make this a long-standing thing where you feel like BYU is going to be competitive for a long time in those regards?
We're blessed at BYU to be partnered with the very, very best corporate sponsors and companies in the world that are invested in BYU for who we are, and a Cougar Nation and a fan base that wants to invest in the student athletes. I've been asked a lot the last several weeks about Brian, what does the athletic department need? What do you need from us? And it's a real simple answer. We need you to invest in the student athletes and to continue investing in the student athletes in their lives, because if we invest in our student athletes, if we invest in our coaches, if every day everything we do is to lift, build, and empower these student athletes and coaches, the long-term sustainability of what we're building is going to continue to grow and be better and better and better. And we're super fortunate that we've built something special, but what we're going to continue building is even going to be more special, because I really believe people want to invest in the individual lives of these student athletes, and that's something that I think will prove long-term sustainable.
Brian Santiago on BYU Sports Nation. I just think about what BYU's done with a minimal share of TV revenue. Like, so how will the full allotment that BYU is now positioning to receive from TV revenues and whatnot help you moving forward, knowing what you did when you were working with not a full bag of chips?
Yeah, it's one of the strengths of BYU. We've always managed resource well. I think that principle comes from the church, our sponsoring institution. And so I think as we move forward and more resources become available, we're already prepared because we're going to make sound decisions and we're going to use those resources wisely to reinvest in not only our programs, but to invest in the right people. I've said it a few times. If we continue to invest resource in the right people, the right leaders, and the right student athletes, we're going to be able to continue to tell the world our story through the remarkable lives of these student athletes and coaches. And so that's what we're passionate about. And I'm super grateful to be part of a team in athletics and at the university where we've already planned for these times. We're way ahead of the game when it comes to managing our resources and planning well so that when the whole landscape of college athletics switches and shifts, and let's be honest, I mean, 5 years ago, 10 years ago, none of us could have imagined this, but on the horizon, we could see some of these things coming and we've prepared well for it. We have a great team put together and we're going to continue to invest in the right people. And as we do that, I think Cougar Nation will be excited about what happens.
Brian, great stuff. I hope amidst your walks at night with your lovely wife, Kim, when you get home, there's still some time for some ice cream, because I know you got that sweet tooth, brother.
Yeah, everybody knows that I have an issue with ice cream. But you know what? You always need a little sweet to end the day, right?
There's nothing wrong with an 11 p.m. ice cream, okay?
You got to have a little sweet at the end of the day. Thanks.
Thanks, Brian.
Appreciate you.
From Big 12 Football Media Days, you can go to BYU Sports Nation's YouTube channel and find interviews with guests like ESPN's Greg McElroy, BYU players Chase Roberts and Keanu Tanavasa, as well as much, much more.
Still to come, a scheduling update in paradise for women's basketball. Shep's excited! And details on Yegor Demin's Summer League debut today. This is BYU Sports Nation.
I know where I'll be for Thanksgiving.
BYU Sports Nation is presented by The BYU Store, official outfitter of BYU fans everywhere.
Welcome back to Studio B. I'm Jerem Jordan. He's Jason Shepherd. Let's get to today's headlines.
Big 12 Football Media Days came to a close yesterday after 2 days in Frisco, Texas at Star. If you missed any of our coverage of Media Days, you can go to BYU Sports Nation's YouTube channel and find all of our coverage, including interviews with players and coaches from all across the conference.
If Spencer got paid in a quota by interviews, he would have got paid a lot. He did a great job.
Did a great job. Hopefully he treated himself to some barbecue.
Also, he got paid? That's great. This internship has been fun for the last 12 years. Yegor Demin makes his NBA Summer League debut this afternoon for the Brooklyn Nets in Las Vegas against the world champion Oklahoma City Thunder. Don't think SGA is going to roll out there. 5:30 Eastern on The Deuce, ESPN2.
Yesterday, BYU Women's Basketball announced that they'll play in the Paradise Jam in the U.S. Virgin Islands.
Congratulations, Shep.
Where I'll be
spending
Thanksgiving in the U.S. Virgin Islands, and I could not be happier. The tournament will host BYU, Virginia Tech, Oregon State, and Vanderbilt November 27th through the 29th. BYU will take on Virginia Tech in the first game of the tournament.
Nice. I could see you filling out your boards later this afternoon. The NCAA tournament expansion announcement could be happen in the next 24 hours. The committee expected to approve an expansion to either 72 or 76. We don't really like this. Maybe you do. Last time the NCAA tournament expanded was 2011 when it moved from 64 to the current 68-team tournament.
BYU Women's Volleyball, Suli Davis and Team USA play Italy in the U19 World Championship quarterfinals tomorrow in Croatia. Davis has scored the third most points of any player on Team USA in the World Championship so far.
And A.J. DiBonta is scheduled to throw out the first pitch of the Boston Red Sox game tonight. That'll be cool in his home state of Massachusetts. Weather pending. It's raining a bunch today, so hopefully the game happens. Coming up, what do the Nets expect of Yegor Demin? And how are we saying his name now? Eric Slater of Locked On Nets joins the show as BYU Sports Nation continues after the break. Welcome back to BYU Sports Nation. I'm Jerem Jordan alongside Jason Shepherd. Well, today at 5:30 Eastern time on ESPN2, Yegor Demin will make his professional debut with the Brooklyn Nets against the Oklahoma City Thunder. Earlier this week, I spoke with Eric Slater, who hosts the Locked On Nets podcast. We react to Demin going eighth, expectations as a rookie, and why the Nets took two other point guards in the first round. Eric, we're excited to have Yegor on the Nets and follow his coverage throughout the season with your coverage of him. What's your reaction been to seeing this BYU guy at number eight become one of the faces of the Nets now?
It was definitely a surprise. I think, you know, if you followed draft coverage, I don't think many people anticipated the Nets taking Yegor at number eight overall, but in the fallout from the draft, watching his tape, you know, there's definitely, you know, there's a logic to it and there's a thought process that I think isn't too hard to follow from the Nets perspective, getting a lead ball handler with his passing ability, his size, the upside there, and then all the comments from Nets general manager Sean Marks and head coach Jordy Fernandez. It sounds like when Yegor came to work out for the Nets at their facility in Brooklyn, they really loved everything they saw from him, from his mindset, his attitude, what he had to say, the way he shot the basketball, all of those things. So I think the Nets feel they came away with a really high level prospect, and he's a guy who it's the first lottery pick for the Nets in 15 years. So whether he likes it or not, there's going to be some heavy expectations there. And I think a lot of the fans are excited to see how it plays out.
I didn't realize it had been that long. I'm assuming with the Boston trio there that all those picks went away. So people are expecting him to be good out of the gate. When you're a top 10 pick, you're probably going to be a starter. Is that your anticipation?
I think it's really tough with point guards, lead ball handlers, you know, rookies in those positions typically don't perform very well. And, you know, from the Nets position, they're kind of in a luxury, you know, where they're going to be in a rebuilding season. I think a lot of the focus is going to be on the development of these young guys, obviously, but also on draft position and where that pick lands next year. So while it's always going to be better to see, you know, Yegor perform well out of the gate, and that would be, you know, a good sign for his long-term upside and, you know, development track. If he has some struggles, he's not in a position where he has to, you know, perform so well and there's going to be pressure on him initially. He's in a spot where you're going to want to see some promise and development in the areas that maybe were concerns entering the draft, but there isn't all of that pressure. So I think, you know, he's going to get the ball a lot. He's going to have the leeway to do some things and kind of experiment and improve upon the areas that I think maybe were some criticism of him entering the draft. But there isn't going to be, you know, so much pressure on him to perform right away. But the Nets fan base, obviously, you know, if he struggles out of the gate, there's always going to be some fans that, you know, go, this was a reach, this was the wrong pick. So there is pressure. But from a team perspective, the Nets aren't in a position right now where they're, you know, viewed as a contender or a playoff threat. So he has that going for him.
It'll be interesting to see how that's handled, because I think BYU fans have some PTSD from Jimmy Fredette with the Kings, and that wasn't a great fit. And frankly, who is a great fit with the Kings at many moments? And then obviously in the New York market, Zach Wilson getting thrown into the mix with the Jets, that was tough too. So how does he come out of this thriving and one of the seasoned veterans who are Russians? You know, only two Russians have ever played over 200 games. He wants to be the third, right? He hasn't said that, but it's assumed. How does he come out of this in a positive situation where, yes, it is a team that is in rebuild mode? He's going to get opportunities, like you said, yet he's a top 10 pick, so people expect him to be good and probably good early.
I think, you know, his playmaking obviously is his top skill, and that aspect of his game shining and him making some of his teammates better and creating opportunities, that's going to be expected. But then there are, you know, the less polished aspects of his games that were some of the criticism among draft analysts and some front offices, which is, you know, the ball handling, the athleticism, the shooting, being able to create separation from defenders and really create advantages on his own, being able to handle ball pressure from opposing defenses, being able to shoot the three ball to, you know, kind of take some of the pressure off of himself. All of those areas are kind of the knocks on his game. So showing some development, particularly the outside shot, because he was known as the guy who could shoot the ball. He's never shot it great, but I think the expectation going into BYU that he was going to be able to shoot the ball, and he came out hot out of the gate, and then he really struggled, you know, in the latter half of the year, had a knee injury. So, you know, there could have been some other factors there, but him shooting the ball at a high level to complement the playmaking, I think would really go a long way to quell some concerns about what he's going to be as a player. And also, he's got that 6'8 frame. He's got a 6'10 wingspan defensively. Can he be a guy who can, you know, not be a negative there, who can hang with some NBA offensive players and potentially have some plus upside there? If that's the case, you have a guy who is an elite passer, he can shoot the ball, which should allow him to play on or off the ball. And if he can have some defensive versatility, those are the makings of a really productive rotation player. So him showing flashes in some of those areas, I think would be productive for the Nets. And that would give a lot of hope to Nets fans, regardless of the team outcome this season.
We're talking to Eric Slater of Locked On Nets covering Yegor Demin. And then the other day he says, well, actually, it's Yegor Demin. What name are we running with here? Because we're still figuring that out. He told us it was Yegor Demin the whole last year. He's added the accent mark, which is cool, on his name. A lot of Russian influence, certainly, in the area. But what name are we going with here?
We asked him at the introductory press conference. He said Yegor Demin. And then the Nets content team put out that video where he went Domin or a little bit different there. So I don't know, I'm going to be out in Vegas for Summer League. I'm leaving on Thursday. So when I talk to him, I might have to, you know, ask for a little clarification on that to make sure we get it right moving forward.
I'm not sure what I'm running with either. But ultimately, when a guy tells you this is how you say my name, that's how you say it. And I think he's kind of embraced the more native Russian name. So that's cool. And I'm interested to see what he does in Summer League. Certainly Thursday is the opening game against the defending champs. It's not really them, but the Thunder. What are you expecting from Demin or Geoman? I still don't know what we're running with. In Vegas, what do you want to see from him and this rookie class and young guys from the Nets?
Yeah, I think it's, you know, the things I outlined before is of expectations for this season with Yegor. This is going to be a little bit of a step up from BYU, even at the Summer League, just in terms of the athleticism of the defenders, the ball pressure that he's going to face. So how does he handle that? Can he handle that ball pressure? Can he create any separation for himself and, you know, create advantages for the Nets offensively outside of the pick and roll? And then the jump shot, you know, how does he shoot the ball? You know, is he a guy who can pull up off the dribble comfortably and knock some shots down? Do the Nets potentially use him off the ball? How does he look playing alongside a guy like Nolan Torre or Ben Sarov? Can he catch and shoot? So all of those things, I think, you know, how he looks handling the ball, how he handles pressure, how the Nets use him positionally, and then just how he shoots the basketball. Those are going to be all the things that I'm looking for, you know, and I think it's going to be really exciting. The Nets have five first-round picks. One of them is going to be out, but, you know, four first-round picks playing for one team at Summer League from a single draft. It's never happened before, so it's going to be really exciting to watch.
What's the chance in a year from now we're talking about A.J. DuBont on the Nets? Because I know the Jazz locally want him too, and we can't wait to watch him in a BYU uniform.
I think there is, you know, there's going to be no shortage of conversation about the Nets draft position. Obviously, this past season there wasn't, but this year they kind of got off some of the veteran guys. Like last year, we saw them trade Dennis Schroeder and Dorian Finney-Smith. Now they moved off Cam Johnson this summer, and they brought in Michael Porter Jr., but they brought in five first-round picks. So there's a lot more young guys. There's a little bit less, you know, veteran mentorship and leadership and experience. So that in itself, I think, should lend itself to some more losing probably. If you have rookies handling the ball like Demin, Traore, and Saraf, rookie ball handlers, it's just always a situation where it's really tough to make that jump, and there's going to be some growing pains. So from that perspective, I would expect the Nets to probably finish higher in the lottery odds this next year than they did this year. This year they were sixth. I could see them easily being in the top four, top five this year. So Nets haven't had much lottery luck in the past. I outlined that after they fell to eighth in this year's draft. But hey, you know, as you said, we got AJ DeBansta. We got two other guys in Darren Peterson and Cam Boos who are really highly regarded. So, you know, for better or worse, whether you like it or not, I think the Jazz and the Nets might be in another race to see who gets to the top of the draft next year. And that outcome, you know, it could have some really serious implications, even more so than this year, because this year, last year we had Cooper Flagg and Dylan Harper. This year we have three guys who I think are really, really, really going to be highly regarded throughout the pre-draft process.
The Jazz and Nets could be in a similar situation again next year. It'll be a compelling regular season for many ways, many ways. Well, Eric, we appreciate the time. Best luck. Enjoy Vegas and watching Demin and the boys with the Nets. We appreciate the time, man.
Yeah, thank you so much for having me.
Don Nets, we appreciate the time.
We're okay. Grandfathered in on Demin, right?
What are we gonna do with that?
Look, I can appreciate
because
though coming to BYU, and then when you leave, it sort of transforms more to Domin.
Nice.
It does make sense.
Nice. I hung out with a bunch of the Domins in Canby, Oregon, the cousins, which is awesome. They have a bunch of them. They're great. It was a great ward. What would be a good first game for Yegor? We're going to see him debut in Summer League today.
Yeah, I'm excited.
What are you expecting? What would be good?
Well, look, the question on Yegor.
Who?
Is always going to be the shooting, right? Yeah. It's going to be, can he be a proficient shooter, specifically from the outside. So a good day, look, I don't doubt that he'll pick up the offense quickly. I don't doubt that he'll be able to make passes that will have people going ooh and ah, because that's what he does. He's so special in his ability to find his teammates and make the big pass at the right time. So what a good day looks like is he gets a lot of minutes and he shoots the ball well. That's what I want to see. I want to see him start right out of the gate with a really good shooting game.
They've got Nolan Traore and Ben Seraph as well. Rookie point guards, international guys like him. So playing time will be interesting. How much usage does he have? I imagine as the eighth pick, he'll go first, mm-hmm. if you will, as the starter. We'll see. In summer league, certainly that's a safe assumption. I would like to see him knock down a three and have 4+ assists.
Oh, you're going specific.
That's what I would, yeah, we got to quantify.
See, I don't worry about the assist. That will come.
If he has zero assists today, that's an issue though, right?
No, it's not an issue. I just expect that he's going to have 4 or 5 at least assists. Doesn't mean like it's the thing.
I would like him to have.
It's the thing with the summer league is you can't be too high on somebody or too low in summer league because of the overall situation in which all these guys play in.
You just want flashes.
But selfishly, we want to see him play well.
But also, since they had 5 first-round picks, 4 of which will play, we're going to see those dudes. And that's 4 of the probably 13 or 15 on the actual roster during the season. They're going to get a bunch of run. Like, Yegor right now is penciled in as the starting point guard.
Yeah.
If you look around and you just look at their roster, he is likely to be the starting point guard unless Nolan Traore or Ben Seraph surpass him in camp.
Well, their point guard last year was D'Angelo Russell at the end of the year. Now he's in Dallas.
He's gone.
So, yeah, I agree. He's going to have every opportunity to be the guy that leads this Brooklyn Nets offense.
And hopefully he gets a good shot and it is not, the Jimmer, Zach Wilson situation of you're thrown in, you have to do something, it's hard, you don't produce, you feel bad, the fans feel bad, the team feels bad, you have to go to another team. That's what we don't want. We want a great experience for Yegor, and it begins today, which is exciting. 5:30 Eastern against the Thunder on ESPN2 tonight.
For so many reasons, I'm excited to tell you that Jaron Hall is my guest for an all-new episode of the Deep Blue Podcast. The former BYU quarterback talks about his NFL future, how he views his BYU career, as well as navigating life with a young family. You can find all the Deep Blue episodes on demand on the BYU Radio app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Do you think college football should get rid of the preseason AP poll? More responses to our question of the day from you are next on BYU Sports Nation.
BYU Sports Nation is presented by the BYU Store, official outfitter of BYU fans everywhere.
Should college football get rid of the preseason AP poll? Why or why not? At Spencer_Linton. No, we have to fill the show. No, he didn't say that. At Royal Coug on X. The only poll that matters is the college football playoff poll, and that's what they do already is delay release. Exactly. All other polls are media-driven because fans are always hungry for them, wanting to know where their team stands. It doesn't matter where you stand early. Yeah. I mean, you could there is a positive angle that we haven't discussed as much of. If BYU had Jake Retzlaff coming back, they probably would have been in the top 20, and now they have the leverage to perhaps lose and afford to climb up more than if they had started unranked. But if everyone is unranked, now it's an even playing field. It's uneven naturally by having a preseason poll.
Which
one do you listen to? On this show, we listen to the AP.
And what has the commissioner talked about for the last couple of weeks? Let's figure it out on the field. Yes. Let's let the results on the field do the talking.
But until the SEC or Big Ten don't do a preseason poll or call for this, I'm not sure. It's going away, but it would be nice. Our elite voice of the day is this, presented by PAX Healthcare Elevated. At Eric Evenson 2 on X. No, it's part of the tradition. I love when Notre Dame, Texas A&M, USC are crowned champs in August and fall flat on their faces.
We were talking about USC earlier off
and
the air.
Preseason rankings help propel BYU to its 84 national championship by beating number 3 Pitt early in the season. That's an interesting point as well. Even though Pitt ended up 3-7-1, that helped launch BYU up. That is an it's true. We wouldn't have the Miami win in the same context if we didn't have a preseason poll.
Do we have
an early poll?
Do we have
calling for wait until October?
Do we have the AP, the preseason AP poll in 5 years?
Yes, I think still.
Oh, okay.
Today's Rising Shoutout presented by Mountain America, the official credit union of BYU Athletics.
Good luck to Yegor Demin in his NBA debut in the Summer League against the Thunder.
Let's go. Our thanks to today's guests, Brian Santiago and Eric Slater.
Conversation continues 24-7 on X, Instagram, and Facebook. All of our shows on demand at BYUSN.com.
Sorry to Dennis. We ran out of time. For Jason, I'm Jerem. Shout out to Cozy Burnett. Go Cougs!